Browdean Farm by A.M. Burridge. Most people with limited vocabularies such as mine would describe the house loosely and comprehensively as picturesque. But it was more than beautiful in its venerable age. It had certain subtle qualities which are called atmosphere. It invited you as you approached it along the rough and narrow road, which is ignored by those maps which are sold for the use of motorists. In the language of very old houses, it said plainly, "Come in, come in." It said come in to Rudge Jefferson and me. In one of the front windows there was a notice inscribed in an illiterate hand to the effect that the house was to be let, and that the keys were to be obtained at the first cottage down the road. We went and got them. The woman who handed them over to us remarked that plenty of people looked over the house, but nobody ever took it. It had been empty for years. "Damp and falling to pieces, I suppose," said Rudge as we returned. "There's always a snag about these old places." The house, Browdean Farm, it was called, stood some 30 yards back from the road, at the end of a strip of garden not much wider than its façade. Most of the building was plainly Tudor, but part of it was even earlier. Time was when it had been the property of prosperous yeomen, but now its acres had been added to those of another farm, and it stood shorn of all its land save the small untended gardens in front and behind, and half an acre of apple orchard. As in most houses of that description, the kitchen was the largest room. It was long and lofty, and its arched roof was supported by mighty beams which stretched across its breadth. There was a huge range with a noble oven. One could fancy in the old days of plenty a score of harvesters supping there after their work, and beer and cider flowing as freely as spring brooks. To our surprise, the place showed few signs of damp, considering the length of time it had been untenanted, and it needed little in the way of repairs. There was not a stick of furniture in the house, but we could tell that its last occupants had been people of refinement and taste. The wallpapers upstairs, the colours of the faded paints and distempers, the presence of a bathroom, that great rarity in old farmhouses, all pointed to the probability of its having been last in the hands of an amateur of country cottages. Jefferson told me that he knew in his bones, and for once I agreed with his bones, that Nina would love the farm. He was engaged to my sister, and they were waiting until he had saved sufficient money to give them a reasonable material start in matrimony. Like most painstaking writers of no particular reputation, Jefferson had to take care of the pence and shillings, but like Nina's, his tastes were inexpensive, and it was an understood thing that they were to live quietly together in the country. We inquired about the rent. It was astonishingly low. Jefferson had to live somewhere while he finished a book, and he was already paying storage for the furniture which he had bought. I could look forward to some months of idleness before returning to India. There was a trout stream in the neighbourhood which would keep me occupied and out of mischief. We laid our heads together. Jefferson did not want a house immediately, but bargains of that sort are not everyday affairs in these hard times. Besides, with me to share expenses for the next 6 months, the cost of living at Browdean Farm would be very low, and it seemed a profitable speculation to take the house then and there on a 7 years' lease. This is just what Jefferson did, or rather, the agreement was signed by both parties within a week. Rudge Jefferson and I were old enough friends to understand each other thoroughly and make allowances for each other's temperaments. We were neither of us morose, but often one or both of us would not be anxious to talk. There were indefinite hours when Rudge felt either impelled or compelled to write. We found no difficulty in coming to a working agreement. We didn't feel obliged to converse at meals. We could bring books to the table if we so wished. Rudge could go to his work when he chose, and I could go off fishing or otherwise amuse myself. Only when we were both inclined for companionship need we pay any attention to each other's existence. And from the April evening when we arrived, half an hour after the men with the furniture, it worked admirably. We lived practically in one room, the larger of the two front sitting rooms. There we took our meals, talked and smoked and read. The smaller sitting room Rudge commandeered for a study. He retired thither when the spirit moved him to invoke